Thank you very much for joining me. I'm Bob Franklin. This is Like It Is. Seb Arts recently lost its National Endowment for the Arts grant funding. However, with strong financial community support, Seb Arts is continuing to serve the arts community in Sonoma despite loss of NEA funding. My guest today is Serafina Palendek, Executive Director of Seb Arts, located in Sonoma, California.
Thank you very much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I want to talk about funding for the arts, lack thereof, implications, and what currently is the impact of loss of funding, your funding, NEA funding. What's the impact on your organization immediately? What has that been like?
Thank you for asking. So Sebastopol Center for the Arts, I wrote a grant request for the National Endowment for the Arts in, I believe it was in the fall of 2023. We were awarded that grant in January of 2025. It was the first time. So Sebastopol Center for the Arts is over 30 years. We've been serving Sebastopol and Sonoma, West County. We have thousands of artists that participate with us every year. And so it was the first time we had received a National Endowment for the Arts grant. It was to fund a residency program as well as an incubator program for emerging artists. That was granted to us in, I think, January 12th. And then shortly, I think on January 25th, right after the new administration began, the NEA let us know that there was a freeze on funding and that future grant making would be tied to specific restrictions of the executive branch administration, executive orders. So, for example, if we were to accept federal funding, Seb Arts, Sebastopol Center for the Arts, would be required to remove any kind of DEI work from our organization, as well as not recognize trans folks in any way, shape, or form, as well as sign a loyalty pledge to the executive branch. So we did not, I mean, the money was rescinded, but also that's just that does not align with our values. So our board issued a statement clearly identifying that.
Is there some concern that there might be funding maybe attached to political loyalty oaths? And what's the danger in that in terms of the impact on the arts and your organization?
Yeah, you know, there is so much danger to aligning or forcing an arts organization to align with the political beliefs of the current administration. We believe in free speech, freedom of speech, and believe fully that the arts are one of the best ways for our community, our culture to respond, to look at situations directly as they're happening, to respond to them, to have communication and conversations about them as a community. So we would never, we, Sebastopol Center for the Arts, and you know, I believe our community here would not be in favor of restrictive, you know, restricting our artists to only create art that was based on what the current administration believes it should be based on. So for example, Robert, there's a current call for sculpture, for a new sculpture garden. I believe it's going to be placed in DC, and it's called the Field of American Heroes. And they're very, very restrictive on who is defined as a hero. It cannot be, there cannot be any diversity included in that and who's defined as a hero. So it's not aligned with our values, and we will not be following those prescriptive orders from the executive branch.
Do you think diversity is good? Is a good thing in terms of you know, bringing diverse communities together and sharing in those experiences that are from different cultures and backgrounds? Do you think that's good? Healthy?
Yes. Yes, I believe that's not just good, but critical to the growth and development of our well-being.
Well, let me ask you about some of your projects. I thought it was very interesting. I'm reading here as part of your press release, the Habitat Heart, that particular project. Can you share a bit more about that?
Absolutely. So we were asked by a local hotelier, some folks that own some hotels in the area. They have an empty lot and right in the center of our town. And that lot's been empty. And they came to us, to Sebastopol Center for the Art, and asked us to curate some public art for the space. So we did a call for entry. We reached out to artists all across the country and asked them to submit art that they believe really talked about the idea of community and the sense of belonging. You know, there is, I think, critical to our community uplifting and survival is the idea that we belong, that we have a place to go. And so we asked artists to submit art that really aligned with the sense of belonging. And Mark Rivera has installed his beautiful work of art that's called Habitat. It is a 20 feet high anatomical art, heart rather, anatomically correct heart, but it's made up of individual homes. So all of these little small homes builds this beautiful heart. And that really is what we believe in and support here in our community, is that togetherness and community is the heart of our town.
Well, let me have you take listeners who may not have been to your community, I'd like to have you take them on just a brief tour. What would they see if they visited your community? Can you just give us a snapshot of your beautiful community?
Of course. So Sebastopol is a small agricultural community in Northern California. We're about an hour north of San Francisco. Traditionally, we were apple farmers, but now we grow a lot of wine in the region. And the arts are very important here in Sebastopol and in all of West County. We have public sculptures all over town. Patrick Amiot's work is all over town and so joyful to see. We have open studio programs where artists open their studios so folks can come and visit. We have an incredible documentary film festival. We have literary arts programs. We have an incredible cinema. So Sebastopol really believes in supporting the arts. We have a lot of artists that live here, both incredibly well-known world-famous artists and, you know, your general hobbyist who just loves to come together in community and make art.
And the funding that you lost, maybe we can circle right back. What's the impact on your organization, the community? Is this a devastating loss, these funds, or how will you recoup or plan to recoup those loss of funds?
Well, I actually have a really happy ending to that particular story.
All right.
When we lost the funds from the NEA, we reached out to our community and shared the story, just frankly shared the story. And very unexpectedly, a incredibly generous donor, a couple, donated the money that the NEA was going to give our organization, which is just wonderful. And we are thrilled to have that funding by an individual. Now, the state funding for nonprofits, for arts and the humanities has also been cut. So the Cal Humanities, all of those grants have been canceled for 2026. There's state funding, but the funding came through the federal government. So that's really impacting a lot of theaters, performance type organizations. And we're kind of waiting to see what happens with some of Governor Newsom's current cuts to see how further budget cuts might affect the state funding.
Happy ending. Perhaps other organizations may not facing similar type challenges and may not have at this point a happy ending. So what suggestions or what advice might you give to those other organizations that may be running against short funds and so forth? What advice would you like to give them?
I believe in, now is the time that we have to lean in. We have to come together. I believe in hyper localization, of neighbor supporting neighbor, friend supporting friend. And I think that's how we're going to survive all of these really significant budget cuts, to arts organizations. It doesn't look good, however. There is a lot of individuals, and small deeds, small acts by individuals can make up that difference. So I recommend we talk about this loudly, think about creative ways to engage our community, and continue to do this essential work. Art is not a luxury, it's a lifeline. It's what provides people the what they need to survive challenging times.
What got you into the arts? I certainly, as a public radio person, got into public radio many, many years ago, and just really became even more passionate about, reaching out and giving voice to the voiceless, and really wanting to making a difference. And I'm curious to know what's empowering and what's passionate. What's your passion with respect to the arts?
Well, I actually went to school for art back a long time ago. And then when I got out of college, it was the 90s, and it was at the height of the AIDS epidemic in San Francisco. I was living in San Francisco, and I started working in HIV and AIDS fundraising, community organizing. So I have a long history of this kind of, I think that the thread that the through line in my story is about community organizing and helping folks out. It's incredibly important to me as an individual for what I do and the meaning and purpose to my life. But back in the 90s, I remember when the first time I saw the AIDS quilt, it was a there was a government that was completely unresponsive, would not even say the word AIDS, was denying, right, that people were dying, let alone doing anything to help them. And so out of that, folks used an incredibly common art form, right? The idea of making a quilt to memorialize folks that were dying. And I think that that opportunity and ability to grieve and memorialize people that were passing, that art allowed us to have a bigger conversation. It engaged people in a way that was just incredibly moving and beautiful. And it impacted me significantly and continues to this day, the impact that art could have on changing hearts and minds.
It's been attributed to the current administration a phrase, the cruelty is the point. And I'm curious to know, I see a note, a question here, how current federal arts policies are a war on kindness and inclusion. What are your thoughts on that question?
Gosh, it just makes me so sad to even think and talk about it. I have also heard that cruelty is the point. The erasure of people, of conversations, of communications, of entire populations of people, and trying to remove the ability for the arts to talk about the important factors at the time. It is cruel. It's incredibly cruel, and it's There's parallels to what was done in a lot of restrictive societies, that they come for the artists first, because the artists are largely responding to the moment of the time. So it's all terrible, right? All of it is terrible. It's terrible what they're doing to the immigrants. It's terrible. All of it is terrible. But when it comes to the arts specifically, I think that the taking over the Kennedy Center, taking like, using Trump's image for propaganda, cutting the funding, creating fear, and chaos, right, in arts organizations. I mean, the current that budget bill, right? Anyway, I think it is the point. The cruelty is the point, yes.
Do you advocate or would you suggest artists using their talents, their fame to promote pushback, such as an example, Bruce Springsteen, as he's spoken out very, very forcefully overseas about his particular thoughts and concerns? You feel like artists should be more forceful, whether they're graphic artists or performing artists or painters. How do you think on what do you think on that?
I think we should all be speaking out. I think we should all be speaking on what we feel and believe to be true and what we see to be true in these times. And I think, artists can sometimes, artists, I, okay, so artists can say things or make things that allow people to, connect on an emotional level, right? So they have a great responsibility and a great power to utilize their talent to speak their truth. But I mean, honestly, I think it's everybody's responsibility.
And art reflects life as artists tell stories through their music, through their artwork, and so forth. I think going back to the Habitat Heart, it seems to really speak to the need for inclusiveness, coming together, community, pushing back against otherizing individuals. That I think is a beautiful example of art really, really teaching lessons and really, really sending a positive message that can't be overlooked, can't be ignored.
Yeah, and it is a visually stunning work of art. It lights up and it pulses. So as you come closer to the work of art, it responds to you, right? So it's an interactive, it's an engaging piece of art. That we have several works of art in this belonging project where you participate. So I think the beauty of his work pulls you in. And then you get to start thinking about how, and then you see how all of these pieces make up the whole, and that it's through together that we are able to survive and thrive. And there's been a, there's a lot of conversation right now about the loneliness epidemic and a lack of places for people to be together in community. So that's one of the things we're really trying to do here at Sebastopol Center for the Arts is create space and opportunity for people to come together to certainly experience art, but just mostly just have conversations.
The loneliness portion, that particular point is very important to me because, again, a lot of our elderly, when COVID struck, were basically, confined to their homes, and there were not very many much interaction. And I'm curious to know art interaction, community interacting with those less fortunate, homeless, and so forth. Does your organization have a role or play a role in any sort of those initiatives?
Yeah, I think we do. And we have nine programs here. So we have a lot of different programs. But the one that I think really speaks, provides this sense of community is our ceramics program. We have a ceramic studio that's open 7 days a week, 9 to 9, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. And we do have a lot of seniors that come and work with clay. And there's something very, something very important that folks gain from working with their hands. And they can work with their hands, make art, right? They can throw pots or do hand building, but they're in community, they're with each other, right? They're literally in the same room together. And we do a lot to support the elderly. So, like, we have tables that are higher so they don't have to bend over on the wheels that could hurt their backs. We have our facility is meant to support the elderly and disabled so that they can come in and use and be in an environment that's really comfortable for them. But more importantly than that, we're really thoughtful about how we welcome people in and create an environment that's welcoming. So, like, the light, the sound, all of those things. How the staff talks to them, how the volunteers talk to each other, what our rules of conduct are, things like that.
I'm glad you said that because I was going to ask you to give an example because, again, making people feel welcomed and having them feel that the organization that they are coming to provides a really warm and welcoming and loving type of environment, almost a second home of sorts, even though it's not their home. So I was happy to hear you make that point. What about dance? Do you have any musical types of a program because dance is really good for those elderly individuals or individuals of any age group.
We have had a music program. We have a choir that sings every Monday, and you don't have to have any singing experience. Everyone is welcome. John Moss organizes our choir. It's wonderful, and they perform several times a year. And then we have musical performances here. We have a blues jam on Sundays on one of the patios. And performances. So yeah, music is really important. In fact, we were just talking about, I saw something in the New York Times about dance parties for older people. So we were just talking about doing that, how fun that would be. It's just to have some fun. I think it's really important also in these times to have joy.
I'm just curious, over your time as executive director, have you had a moment or moments that have been awe-inspiring or memorable in a very positive way that you'd like to share?
So many. The work. Okay, I remember when I was my dad would take me to art museums when I was a little girl, and the first time I was walking through the I grew up in Los Angeles, the first time I saw a Van Gogh, right? It blew my socks off. I couldn't. I was 12, right? I had no context for who the artist was, what the meaning behind the work was, any of that. All I know is that I looked at this painting and it changed my whole perception of what it could mean to look at paintings, right? It changed my perception of reality. And that has continued throughout my life. Like the joy and satisfaction I find in looking at art has carried me. It's one of the great joys of my life. There was a piece here recently in an exhibit that was in the foreground was a wolf, and in the background was a house, and it was titled Self-Portrait, and it was the story of a woman who had been it was her family home, and she described herself as the wolf, and she had had a really difficult upbringing in that home. There's a lot of abuse, but it was so beautifully rendered. And so much meaning in such a simple painting. It was absolutely beautiful. So the work always I find a lot of joy in the work. But I think what's even more meaningful to me than that has been getting to know folks, like how incredibly important this place and this work is to so many members of our community, and getting to know them, taking the time to like sit down and talk with people. Getting to know all of my neighbors. There's story after story after story of artists who, maybe have started becoming artists later in life and it took them a long time, but have now found their true calling, which I love to hear. And then we have kids too, right? So we have both sides of the spectrum.
I want to come full circle and ask you about your definition of the power of community. But I want to say first, one of the things that I find so beautiful about the community that I live in here in Northern California in San Mateo, the beautiful diversity of people. You know, it's so fulfilling for me to be able to be one among many and feel as though it's a community that I could have been in regardless of the time frame and so forth. So I'd like to ask you your definition of the power of community, your community.
Wow. The power of community, it is powerful, isn't it? I've seen this community care for each other in incredibly beautiful ways through COVID, through, you know, the fire. We've had the terrible fires here in 2017 and 2019, I believe. But, you know, even not even in natural disasters, like just how much people care about each other and are willing to, our volunteers here are the most incredible people in the world. They show up day after day to volunteer their time, their human resource to support other people. And to me, that there's nothing more beautiful than that. They want to make their art, but they want to support other people making their art. They believe in the power of art to heal and to lift up. So yeah, the power of this community is incredible. I'm just constantly blown away by what folks do here, our volunteers.
So my final point or question or maybe comment from you, do you have any final take-home messages or message that you'd like to leave us with?
Get more involved, you know, everyone needs help right now and will continue to over the course of this administration. So, you know, again, now is the time to lean in. Now is the time to volunteer and donate and get involved and do the things that you believe in. It's very, very satisfying and great to be involved with. And I really appreciate you and you taking the time to talk, to have these conversations. I'm just really grateful to be on this. Thank you.
My guest today was Serafina Palindek, Executive Director of SebArts in Sonoma, California. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.